1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the show. Ed Marlowe is in. It's our final show pre-Christmas. We're going to talk Racer basketball, a little bit on signing day, see if we have any updates on that. All that's still to come in just a bit, but it is pre-Christmas. Ed, all done with Christmas shopping, I'm assuming? Got everything knocked out?
Just about. I've got a couple things that I still want to get my wife, but she has one of those birthdays that comes right after Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
And so it's just like...
In November?
Yeah, late November, okay. Coming into December. So it's always, we always talk about... Like, she told me this year, like, don't give me anything for Christmas. I'm like, oh, okay. You don't buy that.
She doesn't really mean that.
That's not a real rule.
But she is just saying, she says that to make you feel better.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But don't get her something, and your ass to be on my couch for a week.
Yeah. No, yeah, I know. But, yeah,
okay.
So,
I'm just trying to keep you. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I appreciate that. Yeah. No, I know the rules.
I don't want you at my house.
Yeah.
You know that.
That's fine.
That's it.
So please. Because I'm going to want to watch Reds baseball.
Yeah. Please buy. Exactly. Please buy something for her.
Okay.
Really nice and make her happy.
Yeah. No, I have a couple things in mind. I need to procure them.
All right.
I have ideas, and they shouldn't be too terribly difficult. I don't think the things that I want to get are going to be out of stock by December 25th, so we're good to go.
All right. Well, I got mine done last Friday. You saw my incredible wrapping skills.
I loved it.
And that was the good present.
Got a wrap gift.
That's
tonight,
the best
actually.
One I had. So the others really didn't look quite that good.
Neil, you're not quite twice as old as me, but... You do have, you're kind of close, so like you've had, I'm saying this in a nice way, you've had twice as much time to get better at this.
Yeah, no, other people have wrapped gifts for me, and I usually get other people to do it, but now I'm having to wrap my own.
You know you can buy bags, right? And just kind of put tape over the top?
Yeah, but my wife's really nosy. She'd be looking in those. I can't do that.
I mean, you can, and then it's just her fault when she opens everything early, you wake up on Christmas Day, you're like, well, you open all your dang gifts, here we go.
Now, gift bags for birthdays, those are great, but it just doesn't look as nice under the tree. You got to have the bow and...
No, that's true.
And at least have it the present so you can angle it so it looks good, and then you pick it up and go, who the hell wrapped this?
You don't do any, tinsel, no bow, no ribbons
or
anything
one of the,
like that?
I get the bow that you peel it off and just
slap it on.
There you go.
Okay.
Then I use unique wrapping paper, so that way I don't have to put tags on them. All the silver ones are yours, D.
You color code your Christmas gifts.
Yeah, yeah. They get, and I tell her, don't use this color wrapping paper because that color's all yours. You know, it's kind of like when I grew up.
It's actually a good idea.
You know, only child. All the gifts were mine. Didn't matter. They were all mine. Yeah. Everything under the tree, that's mine. My gifts, they're all mine. So, I'm sorry to bore you with that. That's really...
Oh, no,
that's terrible.
No, I'm going to steal that. That's a good idea. That's actually to color code your Christmas gifts.
Sure.
It's a great idea.
And plus, I'm promoting laziness here. You don't have to take the time to get a tag out, write the name on. Just right there. Got them.
You should already know. Hunter Green, all yours.
That's it. All right, let's talk some sports. I know fans don't want to hear us talking about Christmas, or maybe they do want to hear us talk about Christmas. I don't know, but we're not going to do it any longer. Let's talk Racer basketball. A couple of games. We'll go ahead and get in last night's, and if fans haven't heard it, here's the final play from John Morant.
Brown in the backcourt, finds Shaq Buchanan, 8 seconds, 7 seconds, his defender falls down, he lobs it to Morant, catches it, goes inside, scoops it up, and hits it! The buzzer's down! However, I think they'll put about a half a second on the clock.
And they put .6 up, but it turned out to be the game-winning shot. I know some Evansville folks thought there might have been a foul on Shaq Buchanan shortly before that. There seemed to be at least a little bit of contact. I thought it was a good no-call, but... Nevertheless, the Racers won on a night when they really weren't firing on all cylinders, Ed.
No, they weren't. I do want to talk briefly about that foul. It's close when you look at it. I think the way that I described it to some people, talked to Evansville's beat reporter Pat Hickey from Evansville Courier, and I think the one thing about that final play, and I had a fairly solid angle at it. I was already at the at the press row table at that point coming down because I, of course, was trying to get some sort of photo from that. And, you know, to me, it looked like two cars rubbing up against each other coming down the highway. And Shaq has his lane. He's driving.
Uh-huh.
His defender's trying to come over into his lane. And if that's a car accident, you don't rule Shaq Buchanan as the faulty driver, okay, so to speak. I thought the other driver rubbed him a little bit down the road, and you could have called that foul all the way down, but that was a good no-call to not call him, let that be a good defensive play. When Shaq put on his turn signal, a.k.a. his left wing, his chicken wing, that threw his defender off of him. I don't think there was an actual shove as there was a, oh, I'm losing control of the car. And then he veered off into the median, which looked like he was blown away. And that allowed Shaq to bring it back up top to a leaping Morant, who then drove in for the winning layup. So good no-call, debatable, I'm sure. From Evansville's vantage point, it may have looked like just he got blasted. But they were both coming at the same speed at the same time. There was no – Shaq did not have to stop and throw his guy off of him. It wasn't a football play. But we digress. You take a look at all the statistical categories for Murray State last night. I don't know if they deserved to win. They did not shoot well from two. They didn't really shoot particularly well from three.
Over a dozen layups.
Yeah. Missed two dunks, you know. I know Evansville wasn't much better in that category, but they executed pretty well offensively in the second half to grab that lead. And, you know, it just came down to defense. Again, that's something that the Racers have been able to call on in every single game. It's been the one consistency we've now seen nine games in. Even the game against Alabama, they had a tough stretch in the second half scoring, and Alabama was able to take the lead. But, I mean, they held Alabama to 78 points, and that became kind of a free throw competition toward the end of the game. So this is a defense that continues to have that calling card no matter what in situations, and I think last night was the most indicative of it. You hold Evansville without a field goal for the final 4 minutes and 12 seconds. You still limit them from a three-point perspective, keep that average going, and you closed when it mattered. I think the toughest part for me, and I'm sure you can even talk on this point, the Racers had 8-point leads three different times in the game and just weren't able to build on it. I don't know what happened. I mean, obviously Evansville's coaching too. Walter McCarty in his first year, they're trying to get things going. How do you pronounce the big man's name? Is it Chakovicious?
It's Hat.
Hat?
Yeah, Hat. Disregard the C. Hatkovicius.
Okay, well, Hatkovicius had a hack of a game.
Hatkovicius. Yes.
Hatkovicius had a heck of a game.
Yeah, he did.
And I don't understand why he only played 17 minutes, because the Racers had zero answer for him whatsoever.
There's the old Clint Eastwood line, a man's got to know his limitations. He knew his. Let me catch it 2 feet from the basket, and I'll put it in. And he did that.
Yeah,
did it well.
A lot. He had a plus 16 plus-minus rating in his 17 minutes. He had the best plus-minus of everybody. Again, I don't think that's super indicative of what a player can be, but, I mean, he was absolutely a problem. You had three different 7-0 runs in the game by Evansville, two of them by specific players. Marty Hill single-handedly shot Evansville back into the game early in the second half. Then middle of the second half, it was Noah Frederking who hit the three, and then the 2-2s curl into the basket to take the lead, put them up 54-51. So there were just specific, very specific defensive breakdowns for Murray State against Evansville, but it just... it didn't end up costing them because they won the game.
Matt may need to steal a line from Bruce Pearl using a different name. I've heard Bruce Pearl, he said it after the UAB game. He said, I say this a lot, but it all came down to this. We have Jared Harper, and they don't. And in this instance, Matt McMahon had John Morant, and Walter McCarty didn't. And that's going to come into play quite a bit this season, Ed.
Well, you know, last year you saw that Morant had closing ability, like, hey, I can finish this game, give me the space. But he had two guys in Terrell Miller and Jonathan Stark who had been there and had done that. And you saw that in the Belmont game especially. Even when Miller was struggling and struggling and struggling, his dagger three on a pass from Jonathan, and vice versa. Jonathan really wasn't really stroking his three against Belmont. And then he buried a couple. And then Shaq, of course, even had kind of, you know, was deviated to in that clutch three there on the left elbow. So that was not Morant's job last year. Closing went to the older guys, and as it should. You know, Terrell had earned that right. Jonathan, even Shaq in that respect, having already played JUCO for 2 years and was a junior last year. Those guys had earned that respect and chance to close out big teams and big games. Last night, it was Josh's show. Shaq, for all intents and purposes, had the two free throws. Really shook off a tough shooting night, hitting the two free throws to give the Racers the 63-61 lead. But when it came to needing to score 15 points, 13 of them went to Ja Morant. And that's with him missing two free throws on double bonus. So, I mean, he could have finished 15 points of the Racers' 17 final points. He was that close. So, you know, not his best night, 40% shooting. It's crazy to say it wasn't his best night. Yeah. And he still put up 27, 10, and 8.
Two rebounds from a triple-double.
And also only three turnovers.
Yeah.
The turnovers have really gone down. And also, Ja mentioned this in the press conference last night. It was three of those turnovers. Two of them were on back-to-back possessions in the first half. So that's – he had 60 seconds of turnover basketball, about 60 or 40 minutes of great basketball, but then there was like a 4 minute lull, I would say, in that second half where his shot just wasn't falling.
And Ja, I think he'll look at the film and tell you the two turnovers shouldn't have had them. They're just nonchalant passes. Matt mentioned that on the post game show, and you read the scout's take on him, and one of the negative lines, and there's hardly no negatives, it's almost all positive, is he'll nonchalant the ball a little bit and have a turnover here or there. And he did it twice last night, but he only had three in the game. He continues to have 10 assists, three turnovers. He'll be okay. No one's going to say anything about that.
Well, and not only that, the Racers, that's something else that needs to be mentioned, didn't turn the ball over last night. Eight turnovers. And Jeff Bidwell, WPSD, made a great point. If the Racers have a ninth turnover, they likely don't win the game. You know, it's that close of a game. And again, you got to give a lot of credit to Evansville. This is a team that's a pretty solid 5-6. I don't really care about the KenPom rating at the moment. There's not a full story that's been told. As a matter of fact, I've kind of stopped reporting on that kind of stuff because KenPom, net rating, those kind of things, those things matter going into the NCAA tournament, in my opinion. I reported on KenPom a lot last year, but that tells a final story to me. This is what the team did this year, and here's where they stand. I think Evansville's KenPom rating right now is like 198 or something like that. It's not great. But look at the teams they've played and look at how they've lost in those games. Say they played Xavier to the buzzer. I mean, it was 91-85. You know, and Matt said, that's another thing that I think can be a positive taken in this game. You know, Matt said, this is an Evansville team that tries to create anywhere between 80 and 100 possessions. They're running and running and running. And the Racers held them to 64. And this is a team that scored 85 five times this year in 11 games. I mean, again, let's loop back to how it started. Defense has been the calling card for the Racers this season.
Well, the Racers get the win to go to 8-1. They picked up a win against Jackson State. That game didn't really have a lot of flow to it, but it was a defensive gem for the Racers, holding Jackson State to under 32%, shooting 20% from three range. They forced 15 turnovers, so that part of it was extremely solid for Murray State. Tevin Brown also shot the ball very well in that game, and he this week is the OVC Freshman of the Week, so congratulations to Tevin. But that was a special night. First, they get the win, but also at halftime, they honored Tevester Anderson. You could tell he was really overjoyed by the experience.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a really nice halftime celebration for him. I thought that was, you know, I thought that was very tasteful. I thought it was also really cool that the Racers stayed out for that. They could have just as easily gone into the locker room, talked about the game plan. It was still a relatively close game at that point. I thought Jackson State played fairly poised, just to be honest. I mean, the Racers, from a basketball perspective about this, they tried to pressure, you know, really speed the game up a little bit. Hey, let's get going. Let's get some turnovers and get out in transition. Jackson State did a pretty good job, you know, holding their own in the half court and really trying to get the basket. They missed some layups and missed a couple open threes, and that's part of it. But, you know, and the Racers were able to come away with a pretty lopsided victory down the stretch. Didn't cover. Jackson State actually beat the spread. The spread was 26.5 points, but that's neither here nor there. None of us are betting on that. But, you know, for Tevester, I find the amount of humility that he has in these situations to be really special, because I wasn't a reporter then, but I've been told numerous times the situation surrounding, you know, his resignation weren't exactly the happiest or
correct.
They were odd. It seemed like odd timing, particularly after two NCAA tournament appearances in 5 years, and so, you know, plus his contributions as an assistant to Mark Gottfried. So I don't know much about all of that. I just know that that was a tough situation for him, and so I thought it was really cool that it coincided with the Jackson State game. You know, a team that he also helped propel in the SWAC. I don't mean this like this sounds, but it's hard to win 150 games in 10 years in the SWAC.
Yeah.
Because they've been playing this way for years. They always kind of hit the road early to build up the commission and fund certain things within their basketball program.
And that's how his coaching salary was partially based on the amount of money he could get on money games.
Right.
So, and that's how he got paid. And he knew that.
Yeah.
We're going to give you this much base, but you're going to have to play this many games to generate income. So that's part of the salary.
And in 10 years at Jackson State, he went to the NIT, the NCAA tournament. I do believe I don't know if there's a CIT bid in there anywhere or not, but to win 150 games in 10 years there, averaging 15 wins a game, I don't mean this, like, you're going to win 20 every once in a while if you can sweep the SWAC, but the road games that you have to play in that league are tough. And if you make the most money, you got to travel the furthest. And so that's how that works. And so that's, you know, again, a lot of, and not even just that, though, but Tevester was also a really, you know, successful high school basketball coach with, I believe, more than 400 wins. And so the amount of wins that he has in his career is close to, if I'm not mistaken, close to 800 wins. Had 150 at Jackson State, 100 at Murray State, 400 his career. That's 256. That's 650, close to 700 wins. That's a lot of impacting kids, and that's a lot of impacting coaching staffs. And I know that's why they wanted to honor him this past Saturday.
Well, that was neat. This week they will have one game pre-Christmas. That is at Auburn. They're ranked 7th in the nation. Auburn actually plays tonight at North Carolina State. Auburn's only loss in a very tough battle against Duke. They're talented. They're deep. They average 84.8 points per game, hold teams to 62. They shoot it well. They have a bunch of guys that can make threes. There's a reason they're ranked 7th, and this is a team that no one in the U.S. who follows college basketball will be shocked if they make it to the Final Four.
No, absolutely not. You take a look, this is a team that, oddly enough, alongside Kentucky and Tennessee, should be fighting for an SEC championship.
Sure.
This is going to be one of the better races for an SEC championship. And to be quite honest, I would not be surprised if it's Tennessee and Auburn in that championship. No disrespect to Kentucky. But, you know, if you're talking about pure talent, this team, and I mean, maybe Bruce will talk a little bit about this after tonight, but this Auburn team might be better than last year's Auburn team. And that was a special Auburn team last season that, you know, won the SEC regular season championship and was outstanding from start to finish. And that Racer basketball game last year might be one of the better atmospheres I've seen in the CFSB Center because of how good both of those teams ended up being. And just the stretch. And one of the guys that happened to be pretty lethal in that game, Jared Harper, he's back. Yeah. I mean, the backcourt here for our Auburn is the number one thing I'm looking at. Don't get me wrong, the front court's really special. I believe they've got Donjell Purifoy back.
Played one game so far, got in against UAB.
Yeah, but I mean, he's back.
6'6 senior. That's a big thing to add late, this time of year, rather.
Especially when you're already 7-1 and probably 8-1 after tonight against NC State. It'd be a tough letdown if that were the case. And you wouldn't necessarily, if you're the Racers, you hope they win tonight. Because
if they
lose, they're going to be rather furious on Saturday.
I'll be rooting big time for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, so you definitely, I just expect this to be a really, really special backcourt battle. In all honesty, I think Bryce Brown and Jared Harper are going to be quite a problem for Murray State's defense. But again, these are the kind of tests. This was part of it, the 2-for-1. You knew you were going to come into a really, really good Auburn team. Come to find out, though, the Racers are pretty solid themselves. So, I mean, honestly, I'd love to see a defensive battle. I do think, you talked about this pre-show, I don't know if the Racers are faster than Auburn. I think probably not.
Yeah.
Speed-wise, you're going, mile per hour to mile per hour. I would say, I'd say Auburn's a little faster than the Racers. It's just, you know, can you guys, can both teams keep the other team? Can each team keep the other, so to speak, in the half court? And that's going to be tough. To see Auburn only giving up 62 points per game, the Racers only giving up at this point, what, 58?
Yeah.
57?
Yeah, 57.
It would be, I'd love to see a defensive battle. Not sure we will. I think it's possible we might see a lot of open court play.
And there will not be a John Morant sneaking up on him. They'll roll out the Alabama tape for their players and go, watch this. We can't let this guy do this against us.
Well, they know. Yeah. And that's the thing. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing or a good thing. It's a thing.
Yeah.
It would have been, this would have happened if it had been game 30 or game 2. Ja had incredible tape from last season, but obviously was able to deviate to other guys. Mm-hmm. He's still deviating to other guys per his 9.8, 9.9 assists per game. There's guys scoring around him. Look at what Tevin Brown did to SIU. There's no question. And don't get me wrong, Barry, we can go back to that game for a split second. Barry circled Tevin Brown. He specifically mentioned him. He was like, he's going to shoot from the parking lot. We have to cover him. They tried to cover him. It didn't work. Ja's got pieces around him. I think that's the one thing that I want to continue to iterate. I know you are too. This isn't just the Ja Morant show. I mean, it is, don't get me wrong, it's a show, but there's pieces around him that are helping him go. This is a team effort. But I do think against Alabama, Ja was able to create some shots that other guys on the team could not do. And Auburn knows that. Auburn knows that Alabama threw two guys sometimes, three guys, had the break where he'd have like a double and a guy waiting on him that would leave his man to come chase Ja off the dribble. I do think that those kind of things, Auburn's going to be able to take a look at and be like, yeah, we're probably going to have to do the same thing. That's probably the same kind of effort that we're going to have to give. So you hope, in that juxtaposition, that there are some Racers that are ready to take up some of that mantle as Ja gets harassed, particularly probably on the full court press.
All right, let's move on to the women. The Racer women playing Bethel. Didn't get off to a good start offensively, but played a really solid defensive game. I think you mentioned Bethel missing their first 15 shots. Racers able to pull away and win that one. But couldn't keep the win train going as they play SIU. They had a good first quarter, not a bad second quarter, good fourth quarter. Third quarter stunk, honestly. 23-7, that's bad basketball. They had turnovers. They slipped a little bit defensively. And then rallied in the fourth quarter, but just came up a bit short. If that's the one thing that the team is lacking right now, and that is the consistency.
Yeah, and again, I think we're going to talk a lot about it. Defensively, I think this team is, if we're going to compare teams, apples and oranges and things like that, you know, this team certainly buys in on the defensive effort.
Yes, they do.
Not a team that, like last year, that just wasn't interested in defense. They were very interested in scoring. And I'll be honest with you, I'm sure Rochelle would love to have some of that scoring.
Sure.
love to have a little Shannon James right now running around scoring points wherever she could get them. A player like that would certainly, can you imagine? Let's just briefly talk about mm-hmm. that. Can you imagine if Shannon James were on this defensive team?
Oh, yeah.
We'd be talking about 6-2 right now. Probably maybe 7-1.
Yep. Because you got your inside score, not a bio, and then you had Kashana, who basically scores from wherever she wants to score from.
Oh, and a point guard.
And then it's boom.
And you have a point guard.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be gross. It would have been gross, but that's neither here nor there. There is a missing scoring element with this team, and that's, I'm not trying to take anything away from Evelyn. Or Macy, or Lex Mays, or anybody on the team at all, but there just isn't somebody that in crunch time can just go get a bucket, just something, anything. And that happened in the third quarter. The Racers were holding on to a precarious 29-27 halftime lead. In that third quarter, they started the frame 0-for-8, and it allowed SIU to go on the 16-0 run. A 16-0 run, mind you, that really wasn't poorly defended. It's just the Racers weren't making baskets
right.
to answer mm-hmm. those types of scores. You know, Sylvie and those two guards that SIU has scored 80% of their points. Racers defended everybody else, particularly the post. So from a scouting perspective, they wanted, you know, the two guards from SIU to shoot as much as possible. Wanted to force them out and take some tough shots. It just happened to be they made them. But again, I think what Rochelle was most frustrated about is that this is a racer defense that held SIU to 65 points. That's winnable basketball, and the Racers were only able to put up 59. And that's, you know, you're just, again, some of it's youth, some of it's inconsistency, some of it is size and athleticism. It's coming, I feel like, at some point, it's coming. I was also surprised to see she only ran seven players out there, too. You know, so this is a rotation that she's trying to figure out before, you know, conference play begins in early January. But again, the defense is giving you your returns. I think that that's a really big positive with this program.
I wasn't privy to the press or the AJ Outlaw street clothes. What's up with her?
She is currently suspended for a violation of team rules.
Okay, all right.
I think the way Rochelle put it, I don't know much more other than that, but I think the way Rochelle put it is she will return when conference play begins against Morehead State.
Okay.
I think it's the way she said it last night in the press conference. So.
Gotcha.
Won't play against Kentucky, won't play against Tennessee. Don't know much more other than that. It's not something that they're privy to talk about.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure. I hadn't heard injury-wise.
No, but that's something Rochelle mentioned last night. Obviously, yeah. DeAsia, this is a player that can certainly is going to be able to add some scoring load to this team, and we've seen some promise out of that. Mm-hmm. But until certain expectations are met,
gotcha.
You have to be able to do what the team asks you to do, and if you're not willing to do that, you don't play. So.
Well, the women's team, they are able to dress and do all their things in a really wonderful new locker room. And the next two games, they'll be going to pay for that locker room as they go to 18th-ranked Kentucky on Friday morning, 11 Central Time. It's a noon game there. And then they'll take Christmas break, and then they head to the ranking may change by then, but currently 9th-ranked Tennessee is they go to Thompson Bowling Arena, and they'll get that test. So these may not be winnable, but they'll try to get as many positives as they can. If they can get no positives besides the paycheck, then the paycheck has been well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say, you know, a lot of these young ladies grew up as big fans of Kentucky and Tennessee.
Sure, yeah.
And I know it sounds like a spin, but it really isn't. You want to become somewhat like these programs,
yeah.
Somewhat even emulate them, look like them. Best way to do that is go play them, figure out what they do, how they do it, why they do it, and where they're doing it. Learn about their facility, learn about the team. That's the kind of things that I expect this program to bring back over the next 2 weeks. And then you want to say that they're battle-tested? They're certainly battle-tested and ready for OVC play, because at that point they will have played Illinois, Butler, Kentucky, Tennessee. They went and played, Arkansas State at Arkansas State. I mean, this is a team that's really kind of been put through the ringer here in the non-conference slate.
Well, they'll get their chances. This is football signing day. They have the early one. The Racers, I don't know if they're going to get anything. I did see something that Malik Honeycutt just honored by, I think that was Hero Sports, the same people that honored Dawson. He's honored as an All-American. Let me read this. Malik Honeycutt named as All-American for Racer football by Hero Sports FCS.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool deal for them.
Yeah,
Dawson making that as a freshman punter, honorable mention for him.
Yep, and not only that, let's double check here. Murray State football, if I'm not mistaken, Parker Griffith and I talked a little bit about this. I do believe for signing day, don't have any names just yet, but of the commits that the Racers have already grabbed, which is somewhere in the 15 to 20 range, this is going to be one of the smaller classes, I think. I think five or six people are supposed to sign today. I'll find out more this afternoon. I think I'm going to stop by and talk with Mitch in the early afternoon. I think the last signing that's supposed to occur is around 3:30 today, the last NLI that'll come in before the other signing day that we'll follow up with in early February. But, you know, Mitch even talked a little bit about this as the season came to a close. They really didn't have to find a ton of guys to help them out this next season. Now, I know Mitch well. He's going to obviously keep some loose change in his pocket. We talk a lot about that and about how, you know, if the right guy comes along, we'll make some room for him. But, you know, this is a recruiting class that really can be quite specialized. Mm-hmm. I know they had a quarterback commit out of Central Tennessee. I think I've been told that he's kind of got a And again, this is a maybe seems like an outlandish comment to say. We'll know more later. But it's kind of got a Patrick Mahomes kind of feel to him. Likes to scoot out of the pocket a little bit. I think his name's Brandon Wharton, I believe. Mm-hmm. Pretty talented kid. They've had a couple three-star commits on defense, particularly I think it's McCorkle.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, defensive back. It's a three-star out of, I think, Conyers, Georgia, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So there's two or three kids that have already committed that are already putting kind of some eyeballs on this recruiting class. Like, oh, okay, that's the kind of guys the Erasers were going after. But I'm not sure who's signing today. I'll find out more by about 4 o'clock today.
All right.
It's about five or six guys.
Usually this time of year, it's more the JUCO variety, but doesn't necessarily have to be. Like you mentioned, the one kid is a high school kid.
Well, and the one thing I was going to say, too, from a signing perspective, Preston Rice was an early signee.
Yeah.
I mean, he was able to transfer and be on campus by that, you know, that early spring. I believe he was enrolled in January classes. So, again, we've already talked about this quarterback. I mean, you know that they're going to continue to keep that room as strong as possible. Still think it's the Preston Rice show for the next 2 to 3 years. I mean, spring ball is spring ball. And hilariously enough, I know we're talking a lot about basketball. Spring ball will be here in 2 months. So it's not long before the Racers will be back out on Roy Stewart Stadium trying to figure things out for the 2019 season.
I think Mitch basically said, Preston, here's the keys. You know, don't lose the car.
Yeah.
So it's up to him. It's his job to lose. I guess it could be done, but I liked a lot of what I saw out of the kid last year. I'm really looking forward to watching him play.
Yeah, no, I think he's got a special career ahead of him. You look at some of the three-year guys that have been through here just in my recent memory and who I've covered, Casey Brockman, obviously Katie Humphreys, two three-year guys that got a lot done in 3 years. Preston can be in that conversation. It's just a matter of if he wants to keep it or not.
All right, little baseball. Who all the Reds sign winter meetings? Who did?
We went and grabbed Tanner Roark, if I'm not mistaken.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so far.
Billy Hamilton, he's gone.
Kansas City,
so he's out.
Yeah.
Who's playing center field now?
Hopefully.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know, man. I'm not thrilled about it. I know Billy can't hit. And I get that, and I'm holding my head as I'm talking about this, Neil, because I love Billy Hamilton. I love the way that he plays defense. I mean, he's a Gold Glove defender. If you could give him a golden spike for the way he steals bases. Problem is, he just had a hard time getting on the bases.
Yeah.
You know, his on-base percentage is something that's always been a problem. And I know that, like, for years now, for 4 or 5 years, it's just been a struggle. You know, he hit well in double and triple A, but when he comes up, he just strikes out too much, and it has a hard time taking pitches. And they didn't know where to put him in the lineup. Sometimes he'd bat leadoff, sometimes he'd bat ninth, sometimes he'd bat sixth, seventh. Like, they just didn't know where to put him. You know, and the one thing, I don't want to say he was a weakness in the lineup, but he was a weakness in the lineup. Yeah. I still hate that. I think his defensive wins, you know, his defensive win replacement was far worth keeping him, but I'm not Walt Jocketty. I'm not a general manager. This isn't, you know, I'm not playing MLB The Show. This is not a digital dude. This is a program that's trying to get back into the win column. And then, as we all well know, when you go get Goldschmidt, and the Cubs are active in winter meetings, and everybody at Milwaukee's making moves, they've still got Yelich, you know, like, we got to make some moves if we're going to stay even remotely competitive in the National League Central. I say this every year, but I firmly believe it. It's one of the toughest divisions in baseball. You know this as well as anybody as a Cardinals fan. It's one of the toughest divisions in baseball. The Pirates are going to get better. I mean, everybody's going to get better. And if the Reds don't get better, we're going to be in the basement again.
Well, it wasn't as active as I thought. I like the winter meetings where every day there's like 5-6 trades and everybody's like, wow, I can't believe they made that deal. And there's a few signings, but none of the big blockbusters I was hoping for.
No, not yet. But I still think, I mean, there's still some big names on the board.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot can happen in January. I don't necessarily know mathematically how the signings even work after winter meetings. But I don't see Bryce Harper suiting up for Washington. I don't see Manny Machado signing up with the Dodgers. I know a lot of talk is that the Phillies are going to try and grab both. But where's the money going to go? Also, apparently the Chicago White Sox are in on the market for both guys. Where on earth are they going to come up with what would it take to sign both of those guys to long-term deals? $400 million?
Probably.
Right out of the gate? Do they have it? I don't know. But if the White Sox, could you imagine if the White Sox got Machado and Bryce Harper?
And both had big years, because Harper didn't have a huge year. That to me, that's the reason the jury's a little hot on him right now. It's like, I don't want to sign the guy and have him hit 230. I want him to return to what he was hitting before. Then he's worth the money.
Yeah, to be completely fair, I do believe Billy Hamilton hit better than 230 last year.
I probably did.
Not much better, like 235, 240.
Now, he still had the power. I mean, he'll still hit some home runs.
Oh, no, Bryce Harper is probably the most prolific power hitter not named Mike Trout in the league.
Right, so he's pretty tough. But anyhow, I'm glad that my youngest grandson wants the Cardinals to get Yasiel Puig, and I'm telling him he would be run out of St. Louis. Although he played better, but his attitude, you know how that is sometimes.
I'd love for the Reds to grab a guy like Puig and put him in the lineup.
Me too.
I'm not kidding.
I hope you get him.
Well, of course you do. You want us to implode. But to be completely fair, I'd love to see his power in the lineup that we already have, which includes Votto, Jeanette. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, our offense isn't a problem. It's pitching. So I'm glad we went and got Roark's.
I wish you'd get rid of Votto, because he's a nice guy, and I like hating the Reds. But when he's nice, then I have to like him and admit it.
Yes, you do.
I like people that I say, I don't like those dudes.
Like Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, Johnny Cueto. When you had him, I had no problem hating the Reds. But I like the Giants, though, but then Cueto had it. You know, they had it, so I don't know what to do. All right, Ed, we're done. Have a great Christmas.
You too.
I just hope not to see you on the couch. That means you did well gift-wise. All right,
sounds good.
All right, and what's Santa bringing you, by the way?
Oh, I don't know.
Don't know?
I have no clue.
It's a surprise.
I didn't ask for anything.
Have you been a good boy, though?
No.
Okay. Well, good luck with that.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.